In studio, I've got Professor Raymond Parsons. He's head of School and Business and Governance at the University of Northwest. Now, Raymond's going to talk a little bit about quite a few things, I'm sure, but one of them will be Brexit, and he's going to bring you up to date. He shared with me earlier today a 14-page presentation, so I'm not sure how he's going to boil that to about the next 12 minutes. But, Raymond, it's all yours.
Well, good evening, Jeremy. Let me say this. Those who were listening earlier to the first part of this program might have got somewhat depressed by what they'd heard. And I'm not necessarily going to add better news, but let me say this at the beginning, that a lot of what stems from the bad news is whether you can build confidence in finding the solutions and implementing them. That is what changes the mood, whether in the public or the private sectors. And that's where you've got to find the road ahead, however depressing the news may be. But that said, let me say this week, from a macroeconomic point of view, we had some weak figures on the retailing side, and also the mood in the retailing sector had deteriorated in the first quarter. The inflation figures were more or less as expected. But of course, the major development has been the Eskom situation and its ripple effects of the load shedding on our economic growth, on economic activity, and the costs of the disruption, both to business and the consumers, but in particularly small business, I think has taken a huge knock. And what's happened from a macroeconomic view is that many of our economists, and myself included, we've been forced to take up our pencils, sharpen them, and have another look at our growth forecasts. And it seems to me that the consensus or the range of scaling down our growth forecast for this year is something between 0.1% and 0.4%. Now, you may say, well, if you're growing at 3 or 4 or 5%, that's nothing. But if you are only expecting already to grow at 1.3 or 1.4, the question is, will we drift into recession territory again? I think not. But I think we're getting close to stalling speed in the economy.
Well, I thought you weren't going to depress us, Raymond. Where's the good news here, as you say? You think there is some good news?
Well, I'm saying that the good news is that we ought to be able to say that the impact of this inevitably is going to be rather on growth than on inflation. So at a time when our recovery is slow and indeed patchy, that's a danger signal. I worry a little more because, you see, what's happened has happened. I worry a little more about the impact on investor confidence. And we saw a survey in a financial newspaper today which said that this load shedding could easily derail the whole investment drive. So it's security of power that is the bad message. What is going to happen in future? And that comes back to my point. If you could send out a message, we are getting on top of this, we can give you the assurance we will turn this around. But we keep hearing about 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. That suggests that we're not investing enough time and energy into the operational issues, not so much the financial issues, the operational issues of keeping the lights on. And then finally, if I brought this all together, instead of the 29th of March now being a great Brexit day, fortunately, we can look inward instead, and more importantly, and look at what Moody's will be saying next Friday. That's very important. Are they going to leave us where we are on a positive rating? Are they going to change the outlook from stable to negative? Or might they downgrade us? They will no doubt be factoring all this in. And then from an external point of view, as has been said earlier, I'm pleased to see that the US Fed has decided to stick with stable interest rates. I hope our own Reserve Bank will show the same flexibility about interest rates in South Africa over this period. And then we've got Brexit.
So, again, as we were saying in the earlier part of the program, lots of uncertainty, lots of conjecture, looking down the road. How are we going to get this growth rate back up? Because as we know, we've got an election coming, promises are being made, which I think are probably meaningless. If we went back 5 years and looked at some of the promises made, they were pretty meaningless as well. The big thing we need is growth, and that will create jobs, and that will help hopefully bring down the unemployment levels. How would you take it from here?
Well, my point has been here often. It's clear that even with or without an election, we don't get the politics right, we don't get the economics right. Now, you know, Jeremy, that at Northwest, we've been publishing a policy uncertainty index for some years, which has captured this uncertainty, because your argument is if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. Now, I must say that from a global point of view, when we look at other indices of this nature, they usually spike before an election. A lot depends on what the issues are. Mm. The issues in this election are particularly fundamental and deep. And what's important, I think, for financial markets, for most thoughtful business people, for investors, is will the outcome of this election yield the political changes that make it possible to fundamentally turn this economy around? That's the big question. Mm. That's what the debate is all about. So I think, once again, the watershed is the 8th of May. No one knows for certain what the outcome might be, whether the mandate will enable us to do the right things quickly enough. That's very important, because we are losing ground rather than gaining ground. And I think the frustration of most of us who are involved in this kind of analysis is when you see a glimpse of the potential of what this country has, when we know that plan after plan, and other observers have said, you can be growing at 3, 4, 5, and 6%. We've done it before. We've touched 5% before. And we've reduced unemployment. And we've made some dents in the negative social indicators. And unfortunately, we talk about decimal points, but behind decimal points lie aspirations of people who do not have jobs, who are mired in poverty, and who need this economy to grow. So I think all one can say at this point is the election is the watershed and will decide whether those political changes needed for economic reform will be possible.
And I find it fascinating that if you look at the economy of the United States, even the economy of the United Kingdom, in both cases, employment is at an almost all-time, or unemployment has been reduced right down to minimal levels. Here in South Africa, I think we're also in an economy that is transforming in a sense to being more digital. So sadly, you're seeing the banks cutting staff. We know the mines will cut staff as they move around. So I guess we're an emerging market in difficult times. And as you say, the big thing is we've got to get the growth. We've got the plans, but we haven't got people making it actually happen.
Exactly. It's implementation of the right policies. And above all, I mean, growth is a necessary condition. It's obviously not a sufficient condition. But if you can get the economy moving, the painful trade-offs become less painful. It's easier to make the trade-offs. But if you are not expanding and are growing and you're not getting the tax revenues and you cannot redistribute some of it and in order to invest it in certain projects to get the infrastructural investment going. In fact, that's not so much a lack of funds as a lack of implementation. Why is the construction industry in such distress? Because a lot of the infrastructural spending is not getting off the ground. So government and the private sector must get their act together and get these projects off the ground and begin, for which has already been budgeted for. It's not it's even you have to look for the money. So I think that's very important, and that's one of the most important things that I'm thinking about in what is the post-election agenda for business. And one of them is going to have to be to tackle the issue of infrastructural spending together with government in order to make a difference to growth.
And again, we've mentioned this before, the need for government and the private sector to work together. They must hold hands and collaborate. I think business is still very fragmented in many ways, and there's a lack of trust. But, you know, in most major countries where you want to generate more growth, those two sectors have got to work together and not be fighting with each other, not sparring all the time.
Absolutely. And I think that's also, I would put that on my post-election agenda for business. Get their act together more effectively. I mean, overnight, after the announcement about Brexit in Brussels, the Confederation of British Industry, hand in hand with the Trade Union Council,
that's amazing,
issued a joint statement making it clear what they thought of the outcome and what they thought the British economy needed from now on in order to resolve this whole uncertainty around the Brexit issue. That's apart from the interest we have as a third-party country, of course, in a successful outcome of what is happening in the United Kingdom and in the EU.
And I would have thought that's an absolute first. you know, an absolute first. Now, I know Theresa May, as Prime Minister, has tried to involve the leader of Labour, and I believe he walked out of the meeting he finally went to earlier this week. And so there's no collaboration in Parliament. It is totally fragmented, whereas, as you say, people have to work together, and that way it'll be a much stronger solution.
Well, I'm judging from a distance. Obviously, the United Kingdom must decide its future. But one felt that right from the outset, having monitored this issue of Brexit over 3 years, one of the flaws, one of the strategic errors, was to interpret the 52-48% in favour of Brexit as if it was a two-thirds majority and you could plough ahead as you wish, instead of trying to make it a more inclusive process, realising that in order to exit a club in which you have become involved for nearly half a century would require compromises. And for that, you needed inclusivity and consensus. And I'm afraid that was one of the errors. This was handled largely as a unilateral Conservative Party matter. And the result is you've now ended up with something that has pleased almost no one, and thus you are now into injury time.
And are there lessons to be learnt in South Africa? I don't know. You know, the ANC, we're told, is fragmented, yet at the moment, in the run-up to the election, it seems to be very unified.
Well, I think the issue here is the important role that stakeholders, whether it's Labour or business, must play once we know the outcome of the election. It's not for them to be party political in the organised sense, but they must work with the post-election government and say, we are now going to have a vital and urgent agenda that is going to ensure that the structural reforms that are necessary in this economy to give us a bigger, stronger and better economy will be implemented, and we are prepared to assist you to do so. It's in our mutual interests.
And there are the words of wisdom from Professor Raymond Parsons. Thank you, Raymond. Thank you also to Warwick again. We're coming up to 6 o'clock, and I know that some of you will be waiting for the weekend wind down with Carolyn Stain in Johannesburg, and then later on the Jazz Lounge with Rod Miller, FMR, fine music. But from us this evening, I think I'm finishing just a fraction early, so Gareth Cherry, our producer here, will be filling in for me, I'm sure. But thank you, everybody. Good night.